So framing the plot line of Scripture is where he talks about this piece. So how do we put the pieces of the biblical story together?
So well, he's going to put it all together.
Here are all these stories. Yeah. How does it look? What's the picture on the box? You turn to the cover. It says the Holy Bible, but it doesn't paint you that picture of like, okay, where are my borders?
So he's going to give that to us, right?
We got
to
get the borders first. So there are a number of ways in which various scholars with differing theological commitments have sought to ascertain the overall framework of Scripture's narrative storyline, but they all hang the plot points of the following movements of the drama. One, the initial creation accounts in Genesis 1-2. Two, the fall of Adam and Eve in Genesis 3 and its ultimate consequences. Three, the initiation of redemption with the seed of Abraham. That's where it starts, kind of deal. And that's seen in the nation of Israel. Four, the climax of the redemption in the incarnation of the Son of God and his death and his resurrection. Because we remember we talk about there's kind of two story modes. There's the drama, so we need either redemption or we need the story to end terribly, and we must learn something from it.
Tragedy or comedy,
right? Thing. Yeah. And guess what? There's redemption, then there's tragedy, and then there's redemption again. But wait, there's more. The fifth one is the progress of the redemption after the ascension of Christ and in the expansion of the church. And finally, the consummation of redemption at the return of the Christ. Those last, you know, five pages that you're like, okay, it's really summing up now before we close the end of the book.
Right. So he's going to work us through these six, these six storylines, I guess, these six movements in the drama of Scripture, right? Mm-hmm. And so he tells us the fundamental storyline, the overarching thing of the Bible is how God's glory is magnified in his response to evil through sending of the Redeemer, you know, his beloved son, Jesus Christ. The story itself is the theodicy of Scripture. So there it is. He says the story about how God redeems is the theodicy of Scripture. It is the explanation of the problem of evil. Right, that's what he's getting at here.
Why does evil exist? So that God can redeem. He can show his redemption character in there.
Right, good. And so while this story contains, he tells us, a crisis of stupendous proportions, we do not blame the author of the story for writing it into the plot, precisely because the wonder of the story is how the crisis gets resolved in due course, right?
Oh, George Orwell, why did you create this totalitarian government?
It was wrong, it was bad, it did evil things, you know, shame on you. Well, we don't say that, right?
Right. And in the end, the party wins. You know, spoiler alert. It's terrible. But it's sad. It's depressing. You don't know what truth is at the end of it. You don't know if Emmanuel Goldstein was the true rebellious leader, or if the party is needing to react to it, or it's using it. You have no clue what's going on. And that's what we're supposed to learn from it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we're part of the story now. What do we learn from it ultimately? There's God is the author and he's the reader of his story, but we're not being handed the book and saying, okay, what did we learn from it? We are learning from it.
That's right. We're part of the book.
Right. We don't want it to end with the death of Christ. And okay, well, that was your one chance. You should have done better. Or Genesis 3. You had it perfect. You lost it.
You messed up.
You should have done better.
That's the end of it.
Close the book. Well, we'll know better for next time.
That's right.
Earth 2. So as traumatic as the crisis is, the glory that attaches to its resolution through the work of Christ far exceeds its crushing weight. And that's, I'm reading a book on Puritan and Reformed prayer, and just the words that the heartfelt words that the Puritans had for understanding their own sin and the need for Christ and just, well, you know, why is we talked about, like, why is hell so tragic? There's no redemption process. It's because when we look at it that way, we don't have a correct understanding of what our sin is and who God is. Mm-hmm. And that has to be in comparison to one another. And we don't have a right to call it unfair. We have a right to say God can leave us out there, but it doesn't end at Genesis 3. It doesn't end at the death of Christ. There's more to the story. There's more pages being written. Thus, instead of blaming the author for introducing the crisis, he is praised for authoring a plot whereby sin, evil, pain, suffering, and death are swallowed up in victory, ultimately to be put into the ground, into the Hades, into Sheol, and done away with forever. The greater the crisis, the more costly its resolution, and the more glorious its defeat. That's why do we keep talking about Christ? Why do we keep talking about the cross? It's not just for our sake that we're saying, oh, this is the only way to be saved. That is absolutely true. But it's the creator, it's the author enters into his book, into the story, and gives himself up completely. Yeah. He takes upon the sin of his people and ultimately pays the price for it and then gives us his righteousness. That's an amazing, amazing story. You almost wouldn't believe it. The greater the crisis, the more costly its resolution and the more glorious its defeat. So he says, let's frame the storyline by using our five standard plot points, the exposition of Fatek's pyramid, exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, and then dunamis.